Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Vivo Life Show. It has been a minute since I've been on the mic, but today I'm extremely excited to be joined by a very special guest to tell a story that has been a long time in the making. This is something that we've been working on for quite some time now, and we've had to be keeping it quiet for many months. We're actually over a year now, so I'm really, really excited to introduce the guest who is on the other side to talk about a brand new product that is coming your way. So Nico Ritenour, returning guest. I'm going to say heavyweight champ of the vegan nutrition world, probably the, you know, one of the most, if not the most respected public speaker, author, best-selling author, and, you know, all round whiz kid when it comes to plant-based nutrition. So Nico, welcome back to the Vivo Life podcast.
Thanks for having me and thanks for the nice introduction. Too much of an honor.
Always, always. And For context, Nico has just been finishing. Am I right in saying it's your third book that you've just finished today before the podcast?
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. And it is now in Germany. We're getting up to 9:45 PM. This is the kind of man we're dealing with, someone who when it comes to spreading health, spreading, you know, awareness when it comes to nutrition, he literally doesn't sleep. So here we are getting this done. Nico, it's for people that haven't listened to the first episode that you did with Tori, I'd love for you to just, in your own words, tell us about yourself and, you know, what it was that got you into the world of plant-based nutrition.
Yeah, my pleasure. Sure. First things first, sorry for my bad German accent and probably all the grammar mistakes that I will do within the next hour.
Not at all.
But I try the best I can. So as I said, I'm now living in Germany, but I'm originally from Austria, not Australia, but Austria. And I've been into gastronomy the majority of my life. So my first career was in the gastronomy field. I studied entrepreneurship and I always wanted to become a hotel manager at some luxury hotel in the Cayman Islands or somewhere else in the Caribbean, where it's nice and warm and where I can spend the winter. But at some point I came across many of the topics that I'm dealing with today in terms of world hunger, climate change, chronic diseases, the whole burden of chronic diseases in terms of health, also the costs associated with it, and all the things. And of course, at some later points, I also came across the ethics of foods, especially animal ethics. And at a certain point, it just didn't make any sense to me to keep going down the track of being an entrepreneur or a future hotel manager. Somewhere around this point, it was probably late 2012, I decided to make a short break with my bachelor studies back then in entrepreneurship and go to Berlin, where I was doing an internship with ProVeg, which happens to be one of the larger associations regarding vegetarian and vegan food. Back then, they were called the Vegetarian Union in Germany. So I thought, okay, cool. They're all vegetarians. I'm vegetarian myself back then. But then it turned out most of them are vegans, actually. And they introduced me more in detail in the whole concept of why there are ethical concerns with eating eggs and eating dairy products. And I mean, I'm a rational person. It did add up to me. But I was still, let's say, confused or insecure if this sort of eating style could really cover all my nutrient needs. I didn't know back then, most of the vegans that I met, they could not tell me either. They just said, yeah, I'm feeling fine. I'm doing it for a couple of years. I'm feeling good. But that's not what is enough for me. And I didn't want it to just believe what people say. I wanted to know the answers and know the science behind it. So that was the reason why back in 2013, I for personal interest, started my bachelor study as a dietitian. And I just wanted to do this for my own. I still wanted to work in the gastronomy field, but related to the Vegetarian Union, to ProVeg. I wanted to do some projects with them, but the whole study was just for my personal interest. But at some point, probably late 2016, I was like at the final stages of my bachelor studies, and I realized that even within the last 2.5 years, nothing really changed in the public opinion about vegan diets. But this point in time, I did knew most of the studies that came out already. I did know a lot about statistics. So I thought, why not spread some information about this very topic that I was very passionate about? And that was the reason why I started giving some small talks, writing some small articles. And the interest grew and grew and grew. At a certain point, when I was finished with my bachelor studies, I decided to do a master degree as well. And I decided to write or to start writing my first book, which was not really like a concrete idea which I wanted to write about. I just thought I wanted to sum up most of the articles that I wrote about like nutrient needs of vegans and how to cover them and most of the cliches surrounding a vegan diet. But after approximately, around about 2 years writing the book, I finished it and it turned out to be a bestseller. And happened in 2018 when it was released. Now it's more or less 2 years afterwards. And yeah, it happened to be a bestseller. I don't know why people like to read 500 plus pages on nutrients, but actually a lot of people do. And as soon as the first book was released, it was pretty clear that I will not do anything else apart from my, let's say, nutritional science activism. And yeah, from that moment on, I mean, I was writing on my second book, and now I'm finished with my third book. Currently also writing on the fourth and the fifth one. I'm giving talks throughout Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, a little bit in English-speaking countries as well. And I'm doing product development, as we did. Probably we will talk about this later on. And I'm doing YouTube videos on a regular basis every week. We do nutritional science videos, and I'm doing seminars and like everything related to the big question: how can we feed a growing population worldwide on a ethical basis, cover their nutrient needs, and make it in an environmentally sustainable way? That's it, pretty much.
Boom, there you go. And you dropped a hint there, and let's get straight onto it, because I know it's what the listeners want, and that is to talk about our new product. And you mentioned making sure that a plant-based diet and an ethical diet can also be one that is healthy and sustainable long term for a growing population, and for people of all budgets, all lifestyles, areas of the world. This is something we really have to take into consideration, because I think veganism, when it first started, I don't want to say it's it's a privilege, but anytime you can think about what you're going to eat instead of just thinking about can I eat, then that is a privilege, and therefore that shows that something is out of balance. And therefore one of our biggest responsibilities is to look at ways we can make a more ethical diet more available to people around the world, and increase plant-based options, and also make sure we are catering for people on all kinds of budgets. And I think I'm not speaking out of turn by saying that was a big part of the philosophy with what we've done here with the Vegan Multinutrient, and that was creating a product that allows vegans to be more flexible with their food choices, to know that they're going to be covering all of these potential gaps and potential pitfalls that can be possible on a vegan diet, but what can also be possible on an omnivorous diet, and making sure that we're creating a product that is as up to date as possible with the current scientific literature and fills in all of those major gaps to allow people on a plant-based diet to rest easy and know that they're getting all of those nutrients they need. So let's rewind to that fateful day just over a year ago now, in the beautiful mountains of Austria, when you came to me with an idea. And I'll be completely honest, I had no plans to make a multinutrient powder. But when we sat down and we spoke and we went through your research, then it became clear to me that this is something that could provide real value in the world. So I'd love if you could sort of paint a little picture of the research that you did and what led you to decide that a multinutrient like this is something that the world needed.
Sure. So with all the things you said beforehand, I agree 100%. I think one of the most important things for everyone who is on a vegan diet is to make sure that our ethical food choices are not getting in the way of our healthy, of our health in general. So okay. Of course, there is, it's definitely possible to supplement very, very little things. If you're doing it 100% right, if you are up to date with what kind of bacteria to use in the fermentation process, you could also go even without a B12 supplement. But this is not really the case for 99.9% of the people in Western countries. So the more I studied all the critical nutrients, not only in a vegan diet, but also critical nutrients in different sorts of diets. I mean, we do have different studies from the UK, from Switzerland, from Germany, that show that the majority of people are lacking in at least a handful of certain nutrients. Those nutrients do differ from type of diet to type of diet. So vegans most likely are lacking some other nutrients that omnivores do. But most of the people in Western countries fail to meet their nutrient needs. And this is mostly due to a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is that I hope I can explain this in English properly. I'm better in doing it in Germany. But one thing is that when we started to cultivate most of our food crops, we cultivated them for looks, for taste, but we did not really cultivate them for nutrient density. So what we have now are food crops that provide quite a large amount of food per acre. So we definitely are good at providing more food per acre, but we're not really good at optimizing the soil quality and optimizing the nutrient quality. And when we harvest the food, we are not really good on an industrial scale to process the food in a nutritionally optimal way. So we lose quite a lot of nutrients on the process especially if we make processed food, of course, and heavily processed foods and ultra processed foods. And at least in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, and in many other parts of Europe as well, we are not really good at fortifying foods. People in Canada and even in the UK and in the US are way better with fortifying foods. And due to this fact, we do not get all the nutrients that we need in terms of minerals and vitamins and phytochemicals. Another thing is that when people go on a vegan diet, they of course cut out all animal products. And at least in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, the government is at least some sort of good at fortifying the animal feed with certain critical nutrients. And when they fortify the animal feed, of course, some of the nutrients go into the flesh, into the eggs, into the milk. And so omnivores at least do get some sort of multi-mineral or multi-nutrient through the animal, because they fortify the food. And some parts of Europe do fortify their soil. For example, Finland is fortifying the soil with selenium. That's why they have quite a good selenium intake. The rest of Europe is not as good as Finland is doing. So there's another point. And the list goes on and goes on. So in general, the food system in most Western countries is specialized on making affordable products on a large scale, providing a lot of food, different options, good looks, a lot of a long shelf life, but we're not most of the time focusing on nutritional values. So that was the reason why at the end of the day, this was the reason why I did quit my first master's degree in nutritional therapy and switched to the master's degrees in, I don't know if you could translate it this way, but I think the proper name in English will be micronutrient therapy and regulatory medicine. Mm-hmm. Where we really focused a lot on those very different kinds of nutrients and where to get them and how to get them in the best way, etc. And within the studies that we looked upon in those 2.5 years, I did read a lot of papers, for example, from Dr. Walter Willett from Harvard, among many other scientists, which suggests that even in an omnivore diet, people do take a set of nutrients, for example, a multi-nutrient supplements, just to make sure that they get the proper nutrition, like as an insurance policy. Of course, always together with a good type of diet, but like as a insurance policy. And when I first came across this concept, I was like, this really adds up. It just makes sense. I mean, we do read a lot of the plant-based doctors that are afraid to suggest supplements. Most of them are coming from the US, and we definitely have a different situation in the US than in Europe. So we cannot take all what they say like 100% for granted in terms of Europe. So we always have to see if the situation is differently. And yeah, at the end of the day, I was mostly done with my master's degree. We had the duty to make a 50-plus page document as one of our final exams to a topic that we could choose freely. And regarding this topic, I choose to set up a kind of vegan multinutrient, because most of the multinutrients that are available at the moment in Germany, they are decent, but they're not 100% complete, or they do lack at least some nutrients, or they have bad forms of some minerals, etc. So that's why I sat down, created the multinutrient on paper. And this was more or less the time when I also approached you, because I thought like it's nice to have it on paper, but it's even more nicely to have it in the stores because I just wanted to take it myself as well. And that was basically it. I mean, I'm always coming from the standpoint I want to make a vegan diet as easy as possible for the majority of people. And even though you, of course, can get a perfectly fine nutrition without different supplements. I mean, you could stick with the B12, for example, and get the rest from somewhere else. But as we see with all those ex-vegans, and I think we experience quite a lot of ex-vegans lately again, we see that many vegans, even though they claim that they definitely know about nutrition, we see when checking their meal plans, they actually don't. So I don't want to see any ex-vegans. That's why at the end of the day, I think it's a good product.
Yeah, I feel you. And this is an important point to address as well, because this isn't just a vegan issue. You know, this is these are a lot of these nutrient deficiencies, as you mentioned, are also prevalent in omnivorous diets. There are also some nutrient deficiencies that are more common in omnivorous diets. And one of the things we did with this vegan multinutrient is get all of this data down on paper so we can actually see, you know, which nutrients are lacking in an omnivorous diet, which are lacking in a vegan diet. And therefore show the research behind why we chose the nutrients that we did in this vegan multinutrient. But as you mentioned, and it's a really important point to mention, you know, a lot of this doesn't come down to, you know, plant-based foods being inferior, for example. It comes down to a really reduced soil quality and a really reduced system of how we grow food that is causing the crops and the vegetables and the fruits to have lower quantities of nutrients than originally they should do, which makes it harder to get a perfectly well-rounded balanced diet to cover all the nutrients. Now, this is where our vegan multinutrient comes in, because so when you came to me in Austria, you said, look, here's my research. This is the product I want to create, and here's why I want to create it. And we went through all the research that you'd done, everything that you'd, you know, looked into, and all the real latest up-to-date scientific research. And they're really, you know, after we looked at the market, because one thing that's really important for us as well is not, you know, we're only going to create something if we can do it better than what's already out there and fill a hole and create something that is not, you know, not already there. And when you show me this research and we were looking around the market, there was nothing that was actually filling in all of these gaps and really covering all of these potential pitfalls on a plant-based diet. And that's when we decided that we were going to get to work. And we spent the next year going through, you know, all of the nutrients, all of the different ingredients that we needed, the best forms of each nutrient, which is really important too. And working out how we can fit all these in a really convenient capsule, which you're going to take twice per day. And a big part of this as well was keeping the cost as low as possible. As we mentioned earlier, this is designed to be a product that can be in every vegan household. And, you know, make the transition to a plant-based diet, or indeed the maintenance of a plant-based diet, as easy and as simple as possible. So I would love to talk more about each individual nutrient that is in this product and why they're in there. Now, there's 11 in total, and we don't have to go too deep into each of them, but perhaps we could scan over each individual nutrient. If ever you want to rest from talking, let me know, and I will be happy to do a few too. If we could talk through, you know, what's in there and why it's in there.
Sure. Maybe one thing beforehand, because I did leave out an important thing when talking about why it might be a wise idea to include different additional nutrients in our diet. One of the reasons is the poor soil quality and the poor food processing. But another thing that is really important is the amount of calorie that we have to cover this sort of set of micronutrients. When we think back, when we as a society have been more active, I mean, if we only go back 100 or 200 years ago, we have been more active, we would burn more calories, which allowed us to eat more food to cover our micronutrient needs. If we go back even, let's say, 10,000 or 20,000 years, we've been on the road constantly and we burned way more calories than we do now. And the food in general was less energy dense and more micronutrient dense. So what it boils down to is the fact that at the moment, we probably have one third of the energy or even half of the energy contingent per day to cover all the nutrients that we have to cover with more or less the double amount of calories a couple of hundred years ago. And in addition, our food is, at least in many parts of the Western countries, is less nutrient dense and more calorie dense, which is just a bad situation to start from. Yeah, and regarding the different nutrients, I mean, in general, as people already heard, I'm not as fluent as I wish, but for everyone who is interested in like really going deep into the different nutrients, I hope at some point you guys can be able to translate the 100 plus page document that I created for the German community. And at this point, people can look through all the different nutrients, because I do provide my it was not my master thesis, it was a thesis before the master thesis, but I actually did provide this and also added some additional information to make like a 100 page PDF for everyone who is interested in. Of course, at the moment it's in German, but I hope at some point it's going to be in English as well. And then people, of course, can go through every single nutrient, and then they don't have to trust me or you or anyone else. They can just look up the science, and then they will know why we choose the different kinds of nutrients, why we chose the different forms of those nutrients, why we've chosen a certain amount of the different nutrients, and why we did not, for example, include some other nutrients that they might think would be important as well. But of course, I'm more than happy to go through them as well, like in an overview with you as well. But I just wanted to mention that.
Awesome. Yeah. And we do have those eBooks. So we've got, I don't know if it's up to 100, but it's about 80 pages of scientific data in both German and in English on this multinutrient. So again, you know, if you really want to dive deep into the research and the ingredients, what we're using, why we're using it, like you say, the forms, the amounts, all of these things, like this is what I think sets this product apart, because we can be so transparent with it and see and show why these have been chosen. There's so many multinutrients that when you look at them, like now I will pick up a multinutrient and look on the back and I'm just like, this is someone's just picked up a dartboard, just thrown numbers at it and then just gone with whatever's stuck, because there's no logic and no rhyme or reason behind why it has been chosen, and this really has. So I will link those eBooks in the show notes so you can check them out. And if you're someone that really likes geeking out over research as I do, then it will be a lot of fun.
Cool. So did you say that you guys are already done with the translation?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what ebook you meant, but we have. Are you talking about the actual one that you did in German, which accompanies the multinutrient?
Yeah, the one with the multinutrient on the cover.
Yes, sir. So that's been translated into English too.
Yes, I'm so not up to date. Yeah, I mean, listen, Germany, it's like 100 pages, but it's like 15 to 20 pages of sources, so it's probably like 80 pages in the like the core text. But nice if it's. I didn't know that it's already translated. No one told me. Nice.
Right, well, I apologize then. That's my fault. But there you go.
Cool. I hope it's translated properly. I will have a look at it as far as I can. But I'm sure the person who did it well. Do you have any like who in the team can speak both languages fluently?
Well, shout out to Kinga, who is our localization manager. If you're listening, she's an absolute wizard when it comes to translations. She's native Polish, but she grew up in Germany, and she now lives and works in the UK, obviously. So she has been the translative muscle behind all this, and I think you'll be really pleased with it. I'll send it to you after the call because it's looking amazing.
Kinga?
Yes.
Cool. Thank you, Kinga. Thanks.
And also Sasha, I know you know Sasha's had a big, big part to play in this as well.
Thank you, Sasha, as well. Cool. Yeah, so what do you want to go through? Just like one after the other with some additional information, or how do you want to start?
Yeah, let's I'm conscious of your time, and also, like, let's not go too much into detail as well, because I don't want to send too many people to sleep. But let's go nutrient, why it's in there, the form and the amount if we can. And like I said, I can jump in at any point if you need me to.
Cool. Yeah, I will try to make it as short and interesting as possible when talking about different nutrients. And yeah, so of course we can just start with the vitamins, then can switch to the minerals, and then we can go on to the one nutrient that is not really a vitamin that is in it. So when starting with the vitamins, of course, the most obvious one is vitamin B12. We did choose a special form of vitamin B12 because in nature there are different forms of cobalamins or forms of B12, and with most of the nutrients, when you go and look deeper into the science, you will see that there are some, let's say, black spots where we do have a certain set of data, but we don't have data on every specific question. So at some point, we can just make educated guesses, which are still better than most of the guesses that are done so far. And it's the same with B12. So in theory, nothing is wrong with just having methylcobalamin or cyanocobalamin, but there are some papers that suggest that at least a certain set of people cannot deal with only one form, and they better go with different forms because the body needs especially at least two forms, methylcobalamin and adenosylcobalamin. I hope I can translate it correctly. So we choose a so-called MHA B12, which is the adenosyl hydroxo and methylcobalamin, in order to cater everyone, either if they have problems with their B12 metabolism or not. It just caters to everyone. And in order to avoid so-called B12 acne, which some people get when they take in higher doses of B12, we decided to split the dosage in two capsules that can then people can take at two different occasions within a day. And this allows us to go way lower in the actual amount of B12. So it's just a tiny amount of B12. It's 20 grams split it in two, so 2 × 10 micrograms. As a milligram, sorry, micrograms of B12, which is enough to cater the needs of people, but it's also a very low amount, so no one should have any troubles with B12 acne.
And that's a really important point, because with B12 absorption, there is a traditional school of thought that you would take, a large amount once per day. And for a lot of people, that's absolutely fine. It's a great way to make sure you're getting enough. But B12 absorption is actually so much better when it can be spaced out throughout the day. And that's because of a process, as you know, called passive diffusion. And what that means is that we only absorb a certain amount at a certain time into the bloodstream. And it's actually much more effective to be able to get that in two, or even three doses throughout the day, which typically would be how we consume B12, right? We'd be consuming this bacteria on our food, in our water supply, and it would be, drip fed throughout the day versus, one big chunk. So that's why we chose to go for the lower amount, but spacing out into two capsules, one for the morning, one for the evening, to make sure that you're optimizing the amount you're consuming.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, you did call it passive diffusion. Actually, what we are focusing on is the active part. The passive diffusion is like the percentage of B12 that goes without a carrier in the bloodstream. So that's the passive diffusion. But when we split it off, actually, what we are aiming for is the active one with the intrinsic factor. But anyway, so the important point is you can only absorb so much within a time frame of 4 to 6 hours. Mostly, it's 1 or 2 micrograms. And if we split it out, we can get the full coverage with lower dosages. That's totally correct. And yeah, in nature, of course, if you consume animal products, mostly you consume them several times a day. So that's why you only need a minuscule amount of B12. But if you consume it just once a day, or some people only consume it once a week, then you really have to go very high because of the passive diffusion. You only absorb about 1 or 2% of the total amount in the passive way. So that's why you have to go really high. But we don't want to do that here. Yeah, and the second B vitamin that we choose is vitamin B2. Not really an interesting vitamin at the end of the day. It can get critical if people are not really consuming mushrooms and certain types of nuts on a daily basis, or how do you call it, nutritional yeast. These are the three food groups that are very high in B2. So especially almonds, in terms of mushrooms, it's especially the normal button mushrooms and some others as well, shiitake as well, and yes, most of the different nutritional yeast forms. But if you're not consuming all of them, it can get a little bit hard to get your B2 amount every day. So just to have like a insurance policy as well, we did include the B2, and due to the fact that it's a water soluble vitamin, if people get enough within their diets, they cannot have problems with it. In general, we've chosen all the different nutrients in an amount that cannot go beneath or like over the tolerable upper intake level. So even if you're eating like 100% whole food plant-based, getting all the nutrients, if you still want to take the insurance policy of the micronutrient, you cannot go above your upper level, as long as you're not eating a lot of seaweed or Brazil nuts. That's the only two food groups that we are suggesting that you leave out or minimize if you're taking the multinutrients. Mm-hmm. And the third vitamin is vitamin D, vitamin D3. We did choose a higher amount than most of the authorities would suggest, simply because the data shows that it's a good idea to do so. Right. Data shows that you should aim for like 40 international units per kilogram of body weight, which would be even a little bit higher than our dosage, but we wanted to keep it in a moderate as well. So yeah, it's 2,000 international units of vitamin D3. Because, I mean, if you take a look at the data, most European countries, they do not meet their RDA for vitamin D. It's a pro-hormone. Normally, you don't take it with the food. You only absorb about 20% of your vitamin D from food. About 80% you get via sun exposure. And most of the people do not get enough sun exposure, even if they are eating omnivore diet. Of course, diet has nothing to do with it. And there's another vitamin that used to be called vitamin B4. It's choline. The Institute of Medicine in the US is categorizing it as an essential nutrient, but for example, the German nutritional authorities are not labeling it as a essential nutrient. So we are like stuck in the middle, but it's if you take a look at the data, the best sources of choline are animal-based, especially eggs, but other animal products as well. And just to make sure that if some people are not synthesizing enough on their own, we did include some of the choline, because it's especially obvious with some of the ex-vegans. They claim that they have brain forks, concentration problems. And if you're making sure your B12 is all right, choline is, in my opinion, the next possible thing that could be missing, especially for brain development when you're pregnant, but also for grown-ups. So in order to avoid this in the future, we decided to include choline as well. You do get some choline with your broccoli, you do get some choline with your soybeans, etc. But due to the fact that we are not really sure, in like none of the authorities is sure how much choline we actually need, it's good to have some extra choline in your supplement as well. That's why we included it as well. This is with the vitamins. There's, I don't know, it's vitamin A is also in the supplement as well, just because of the fact that approximately it's somewhere between 10 to 30% of the population in Western countries. Is also the data is not very precise on this question, how many people are affected by this, but let's say 10 to 30% of the people having a harder time converting beta carotene or other carotenoids to vitamin A. So to make sure that we catch those people with our supplement as well, we did include a decent amount of vitamin A, which is not too much for people who actually do convert it properly, but it's definitely very important for people who do not. Does it make sense?
Yes. And is there a way of telling if you can convert or not, or would it be best to do that via a test?
I mean, you can test. You can test for most of the things. The question is, even if we do suggest people to test it, how many people will test at the end of the day, and how many people will just don't care, right? Yeah. So there is a way to test it. The problem is the standard vitamin A serum test is not really reliable. So what you could do, you could do a vitamin A serum test, and you can also test for a biomarker called retinol binding protein. And if you divide one through the other, you will get do you call it coefficient in English? Like the number you get out of a division, how do you call that?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, and if this is above 0.7, I think that's the standard in at least in Germany. You can be sure that you are well equipped with your vitamin A. If it's below, then you are lacking it, which means in a vegan diet you're not converting beta carotene efficiently because you're not getting any retinol, any vitamin A in your diet. So you're dependent on the conversion. So you can do this, of course, but I am afraid that many people won't take the test because, especially the second biomarker, not all the laboratories can test for them. And it's also sort of expensive as well. And yeah, that's basically it. I mean, many people recognize it when their eyesight is getting worse.
Yeah.
And we don't want to wait for that.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So basically that's it with the vitamins. Of course, there's so much that you could say through different forms. I mean, we started with the forms of vitamin B12. With vitamin D, of course, we've chosen the D3 version. With the choline, which we've chosen the choline. Do you pronounce it choline bitrate in English?
Perfect.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. So I mean, there are different forms that would work, but we've always chosen either the form that is most well researched in terms of, for example, the MHA, or we've chosen some forms where we know that this has the best do you call it price and how do you call it, like the best price value in terms of it has a like it's not too expensive, which would make the product too expensive at the end, but it's still a decent form of the certain vitamins so that we can have the best possible product for the best possible price. If this
Well, this is an important point as well, because when it came to choline, we were stuck between the choline bitartate and then also the CDP version of choline. Now they both come with a lot of evidence, and CDP, it seems, may based on the current research be a more bioavailable form. However, there's with it being such a newly recognized nutrient, there's so much information emerging, but there's definitely substantial evidence to support the choline bitartate, which we chose. What we found is that the choline itself was actually contributing already more than 50% of the product cost. And we found that when we changed it to the CDP, it would pump the cost up so much that the price would have to increase from £19.99 to about £24.99. So it would have to go up by about 25% just for this new form of multinutrient, of choline, should I say. And therefore that brings you the question, well, if our objective with this, and we said it when we sat down, it was to create like the world's most effective multinutrient at the most affordable price possible, then something would have to give. So what we decided there is that the choline bitartate is going to service the needs of the choline, but also keep the price at sensible price for most people. So that was an important thing to factor in. I think that's the biggest example of a nutrient when we've done that. For all the others, I think it's pretty much all the evidence shows that this is the most superior form. But with choline, that's definitely something that is worth looking at.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, in terms of choline, if there would be substantial data that definitely show into one direction, we would definitely go for this type of form. But without having a large body of evidence or large balance of evidence in total, it just didn't seem to add up to choose a more expensive form if we're not even sure if it's worth the price at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then if in the future more data arises and probably also the cost goes down as well, we can. That's a good thing about having a company like you. We can from batch to batch also think about changing the different forms and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean that's basically about the vitamins. More about the vitamins people can read in the PDF, and there are altogether six minerals in the supplement as well. The most two like the most obvious ones or the most obvious two are iodine and selenium. Those two minerals are important for especially for thyroid function, and even though we do see in the Adventist Health Study and other studies that vegans do fairly good with their thyroid function, we do have at least a lot of clinical case studies where people are not doing as well, especially in European countries where our soil is more deplete of selenium, and vegans tend to consume lower amounts of iodized salt than omnivores do. So that's why they most of the time are profiting off getting those nutrients in a nutrient supplement. We've chosen those two. We have also chosen a decent amount of calcium, zinc, and iron, just again as an insurance policy. I mean, when people are consuming fortified plant milks on a regular basis, they're not really dependent on the extra calcium, but it's in a moderate amount. So even if they do consume it, it's not a problem. But not all people are consuming fortified plant milks, especially in Germany. Many brands are still without any fortification. And in general, I mean, one of the important things is the multinutrient is made especially for people living in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, also made for most of the European customers. When thinking about US, Canada, maybe even Great Britain, probably the situation is differently. So if you're not from those three German-speaking countries or the European Union, please make sure to check upon if maybe your nutrient needs are differently from the needs of the guys from Europe.
Yeah, in the UK, it's definitely more aligned with the EU, but US and Canada it is different. As we have seen, the intake of selenium and iodine specifically seem to be higher in the US. So it's important to point out that, you know, the research for this multinutrient was done, you know, based on those European countries. Certainly iodine and selenium are two things that seem to be lacking in the UK too.
Okay, good to know that the situation is more like some sort of comparable. So yeah, I mean, if there would be more data that I'm aware of, I'm glad to check it for the UK as well. But in terms of Epic Oxford study and other studies, as you said, it seems like being a similar situation. In terms of zinc and iron, we've chosen quite a different form than many other supplements. Of course, there are some multinutrient supplements out there. I also did a table of comparison of different multinutrients for my new book that's coming out in November. And there are some multinutrients on the market that have quite a lot of nutrients in them as well. And they only cost about half of the price than yours or ours do. But if you take a closer look, you see why. I mean, they do exclude most, if not all, of the more expensive vitamins, like vitamin D3 in high doses, vitamin K2, choline, etc. And when you take a look at the different forms of minerals, for example, iron and zinc, they mostly go with less bioavailable forms that are way cheaper. For example, iron oxide and zinc oxide, which is kind of a problem because especially for iron, you can easily upset your stomach with taking a larger quantity of iron, especially if you take them in forms are like iron oxide. So we've chosen a I don't know if you call it in English, also chelated form. So like a form of a mineral that is bound to a amino acid.
Yeah.
In our nutrient, it's a bisglycinate form, if that's the proper pronunciation. So it's glucine. It's an amino acid that is bound to the mineral, and this makes it more bioavailable. It's of course a more expensive form, but it's definitely worth the price. For the other two minerals in it is calcium and magnesium. We've chosen a sort of marine-based mineral for this because we always have to make sure that on the one hand, we have a form of mineral that has a high amount of in German it's called elementares magnesium, like elemental magnesium. So like the amount of magnesium in a certain form of mineral. Could you help me out with that one?
Yes, no. So, sorry, how do you mean?
Yeah, sorry. So different forms of minerals do have a certain percentage of active ingredient in them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there are some, for example, some forms of magnesium that have a high bioavailability, but a low amount of active magnesium in the form.
Yeah, precisely. So what that means is that when we were considering how we make this product, a big factor of this is how do we fit it into two capsules? Because again, we want to make this convenient and we don't want people having to swallow, you know, multiple capsules per day. So for example, the form of magnesium that we were looking at originally was highly bioavailable, but it was also not very active, which meant you had to use a lot more of it. And that meant that it was actually taking up too much space in the capsule, and it would have had to increase the serving to three, maybe even four capsules. As an example, at the moment, I currently take a magnesium supplement in the form of magnesium glycinate, and I get 250 milligrams of magnesium, and I have to swallow two huge capsules just for this 250 milligrams of magnesium. Now, obviously, we wanted to make sure that this magnesium could be spread out throughout these two capsules and not mean that, you know, we have to increase the serving size. So that's why we chose the form that we did, because it had that perfect balance of being active, but also not taking up too much space in the capsule.
Yes, way better explained than my explanation. Thanks. That's the case. So it's also trying to get the best of both worlds, having a mineral that is with a good bioavailability, but also has a high amount of active ingredients.
Precisely.
Yes. And let me think if I have forgotten something. I should have prepared the table with me.
There was one we didn't touch on, and that was vitamin K2.
Of course, we left out some of the vitamins, and I also mentioned it because it's one of the more expensive ones. I mean, the data on vitamin K2, it's one of those kind of data sets where I wish we would have more data to rely upon. So that's why I'm not saying that people have to take the vitamin K2 for sure, because the data is just not clear enough on the different forms of vitamin K and the amount that people need and how much you could synthesize in your microbiome, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, there's some evidence that suggests that, especially in combination with a decent amount of calcium and the proper amount of vitamin D, it does have some synergistic effects. And because the multinutrient should be an insurance policy, which means maybe it's even covering more than you need, but it definitely covers all you need in terms of critical nutrients, of course, we decided to include it. And we included it in the most active form possible. So it's a, how do you call it in English? It's a vitamin, it's like a vitamin K2. It's a MK7, all trans menaconine form. How would you call it in English?
I can't even pronounce this word in English, so I'm not going to try. I normally say MK7 or trans. And the form is from natto, which is a fermented soybean, and it's actually it's one of the only, you know, plant-based reliable sources of K2 that there is. Yes. So that's important to add.
It tastes horrible. I mean, most people cannot eat natto on a daily basis, so
no, I certainly can't.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, so you said it perfectly. So it's one of the food-based ingredients. We do have this food-based types of ingredients. We do have this marine-based sorts of nutrients. We definitely also have some synthetic forms of nutrients, like the retinol acetate for the vitamin A. And this is an important thing to keep in mind. It's not about nutrients being natural or not natural, unnatural or synthetic. It's about nutrients being bioavailable, being in the right dosage, in the right combination, in the right form. And it's not about some sort of natural fallacy. And certainly it's not about this whole idea that as soon as you take something in a, let's call it, isolated form, it's not good for your body. Your body just needs a certain set of nutrients. You should be aiming to provide your body with those set of nutrients, and you should also be aiming to not overdo with nutrients that could be potentially devastating in the long run if you overdo them. And as long as you are doing this either on a plant-based diet or on any other kind of diet, you can make sure that you are giving your body everything the body needs and making your health as good as possible.
Yeah, for sure. And this is an important point, because people, and myself included, we stress that your nutrients, wherever possible, come from whole foods. And the reason for that is because whole foods come not just with nutrients, they come packaged with fiber and enzymes and antioxidants and phytonutrients and all these other things that, of course, are so, so important for our health. So this is why it's so important to get as many nutrients as you can from whole foods. However, the point of supplements is just that they are there to supplement an already healthy diet. We're not saying that you should, you know, just eat Weetabix and Cheerios all day and take a multinutrient. Of course not, because that would defeat the whole point. But it's also saying that, you know, in the world that we live in, where certain nutrients are harder to get than others, that this is a really efficient way of topping those levels up. And then, of course, all the cofactors, phytonutrients, antioxidants that we speak of can still do their jobs, and you're still more, now more than ever, making sure that you're getting as many nutrients as you can from those whole foods.
For sure. Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, a supplement is not a substitute for a healthy diet. It's an important additional thing for a healthy diet, just to make sure to cover some potential critical nutrients. But it's definitely not a substitute. If you have a shitty diet, you can supplement whatever you like. You most likely cannot compensate for the devastating effects of it. You, of course, can substitute for some nutrients, but not for the overall bad diet. So as you said, I couldn't agree more. The basis and the foundation is still a whole food plant-based diet, stressing whole foods, stressing like micronutrient dense foods. But on the other hand, it's just what we've saw in the past, and it's also what the data shows. Many people are aiming for a nice and well-balanced whole food plant-based diet, but at some point they're just lacking of a certain set of nutrients. It's most of the time just like a couple of them, but in the long run, this is what could ruin at least some parts of the health, and we just don't want to see this anymore.
No, absolutely not. And this is where this product comes in, and it's certainly been a ride to get there, hasn't it? You know, like I said earlier, we first spoke about this back in August of last year, and it has, you know, when we sat down, one of the questions you asked me is, how long does it take to create a product? Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, being realistic, 9 to 12 months, and it's actually taken us longer. And one of there's been quite a few things that have come up along the way, which has been a real learning curve for us, but also a real part of the development process, and just showing why, you know, we take the time that we do to test our products, to make sure that everything is exactly as we say it is. Now, a couple of examples I can give. One would be when we were creating the product and trying to fit it into two capsules, we found that we did have to change a couple of the nutrient forms, because otherwise it was going to increase the size, as we spoke about, and make sure that you have to swallow more capsules. And as a result, that would have also forced the cost of the product up. So that was a really important thing. And getting that balance between bioavailability and also the right forms of nutrients that can fit into the two capsules became a bit of a jigsaw puzzle, didn't it? We were going backwards and forwards on these different kinds of nutrients, looking at the research, looking at what would fit into the capsule, and eventually we got there.
Yeah, as you said, it's a good compromise. It was, I mean, if we would just have gone with the easiest way out, we probably could have done the supplement earlier. But that's not what you want to do. That's not what I want to do. So I think at the end of the day, it was definitely worth it. And of course, due to Corona, I think it also delayed a little bit more.
It did. It took us a long time to get things like lab tests back. And one of those examples was the issue we found with the iodine. And what happened there is we chose the most active form of iodine possible, potassium iodide, and it was an extremely active form of iodine. And what we found is that when we were third-party testing these products to make sure that they had the right amount of nutrients in each capsule, every capsule that we tested was pretty much standardized for all of the nutrients, selenium, iron, zinc, all of the minerals, all of the vitamins. And the one red flag that kept being raised was iodine. You test a capsule and it would have double the amount of iodine in it. And then you test another capsule and it would have pretty much zero iodine in it. And what we found is that there was the iodine we were using was such an active form, which meant we had to use so little iodine. To put it in perspective, we, in our first batch, we blended 100 kilos of the multinutrient powder, and only 13 grams of that powder was iodine. So what that meant is there were physically not enough granules of iodine throughout the whole blend to have an even dispersion in each capsule, and therefore some capsules would have zero iodine and some capsules would have too much iodine. So what we had to do is use a slightly less active version of the iodine, in fact, like a significantly less active version of the iodine, which meant that it would then disperse more evenly throughout the blend. We tested it again. We had to wait weeks for the lab test results to come back because of all the things that are happening in the world right now. And thankfully, the most recent test showed us that the iodine is exactly where we want it to be in each and every capsule, which is really fantastic. And all of that meant the product that we were telling people was going to launch in spring ended up launching in the middle of autumn. We're now working towards the 30th of October as our launch date. But the end is in sight now. The product is being produced and it's being shipped out to our warehouses as we speak. And dude, I could not be more excited about this one. Knowing all the hard work and research that has gone into it, it's something that I think is going to change a lot of lives.
Likewise. I mean, as you said, that's the important point about lab tests. And I wish more companies would be as eager on doing some sort of test like this. Because, I mean, you know it. Supplements in general, they are really poorly regulated. And there are a lot of companies out there that take advantage of this poor regulation. Yeah. So it's really hard for consumers at the end of the day. And sometimes it's even hard for health professionals to differentiate good products from not so good products. Mm-hmm. You really did a great job, and I'm really thankful for your preciseness in terms of testing everything and making everything precise. So I'm really looking forward to the launch of the supplement. And I think one thing that is especially for my German audience is important, but maybe for the other audience as well. I mean, we discussed it was probably one of the first things we discussed when creating the product, that I said, as a nutrition scientist, I cannot or I don't want to participate in the types of sale directly, because otherwise, whenever I'm suggesting people to take the supplement, of course, it looks like a conflict of interest. That's why I did not participate in the sales directly.
Yeah, and that is a really important point to note, and I think it's a real stamp of integrity for your work in this product, because you know you have done this out of your continuing mission and your continuing passion to make a plant-based diet as easy and as effective as possible for as many people as possible. And it just goes to show the credibility behind this product. And I'm really thankful that you know we were able to work together on this. I'm truly excited about the product, like I say. And from our point of view, what our mission was to do with it, we wanted to align as much as we could. So that was why we've done everything we can to get the price as low as possible. And also, you know, backing it up with all of this research, all of these studies, like you say, is the supplement industry is poorly regulated, and it frustrates the hell out of me, especially, you know, before Vivo came along, I used to work in the supplement industry. And it was then that I started getting deep into how things work and realizing that most companies aren't creating products that they say they are. And that's what made me on a mission to do things differently. So now we can create this product that is not only backed up by third party data, but it's also backed up by independent lab testing as well, which is so important. And we are nearly there. So by the time this podcast is released, we will be about 2 weeks away from launch. We're going to be launching on the 30th of October. And it is going to be launching in Germany and also all around Europe, in the UK. The USA, we are going to be waiting a few more weeks for launch, just because we've got to send all of the stock out there. We're not air freighting anything. It's important to us that we keep the carbon footprint down. And that's one last thing I want to say about the product, actually. And this is something that you push very hard for, and I'm really grateful that we did. And that is that this product will be launching in compostable packaging from day one. So when you finish with your multinutrient, you can just cut the bag up and you can put it in your food waste, or you can add it to your garden compost, and it will break down into healthy soil. So it becomes a product that is really sustainable on all fronts, you know, not just the product itself, helping to make a more ethical, more sustainable diet more effective, but also the packaging. You know, it's going to be something that leaves zero waste. It can actually add nutrients back into your soil and not just end up in landfill like the majority of multinutrient packagings. So that is about everything, I think, unless there's anything else you want to say about the multinutrient and you know your perspective on it.
I feel like we've touched upon the most important points. I'm looking forward to our next talk. Until then, I'm trying to learn better English, and I hope we're not doing a talk when I'm like spending 3 days in a row writing the book, being exhausted. But I hope I could bring across the most important points, even with my decent, not very educated English. Yeah.
Well, dude, I'm gonna give 2 points on that. So as someone who's learning a new language myself right now, I know how hard it is. I also think that you pronounced most of those nutrients far better than I ever do, mm-hmm. as someone who's an English native speaker. So please don't be hard on yourself on that. And when it comes to the books as well, yeah, like I said, we're doing this very late at night because this was the only window we could get. So I'm just incredibly grateful for your time. When it comes to the books, where can people find out more about them, and you know, how can people prepare for this next book that's going to be coming soon?
Yeah, I'm happy to announce. Probably it's even the first time when I can when I can announce the English versions of the book, because we just the day before yesterday we get the final information from our two publishers that in June 2021 at least the first two books are coming out in English. So my first 500 pages plus nutritional guide on all the critical nutrients and all the cliches and myths on a vegan diet is coming out in English, and the cookbook that is accompanying the theory book as well is coming out in English. So when people are good with English, they can check out those books. The day before yesterday again, I also got the news that the first book at least is coming out in Polish as well. So wow. If anyone from Poland, feel free to check out the first book in Polish as well. I'm excited for that one as well. And there are going to be a couple of other languages as well. And for everyone who is speaking German, the new German version of the third book on low budget vegan cooking is coming out 20th of November this year. And I hope and I'm confident that next year, end of next year, this third book will come out in English as well. And apart from that, we have other books coming out the next 2 years on topics like vegan sports nutrition, vegan nutrition in pregnancy, and for lactating women and for children, and for beginners as well. So there are a couple of books coming in the future as well, just to make sure that people in every stage of the life cycle can get the information that they need. And hopefully, as soon as we have a little bit of time left, we would also start doing voiceovers in English for our German YouTube channel, so people can also get all the information from the German YouTube channel as well.
And now you see why this man doesn't sleep.
Actually, I'm not doing too many things apart from sleeping and working, but I'm really trying. Okay. Get a decent amount of sleep, because I've read the data. I know how important it is to sleep, so that's I'm trying to sleep as much as I can.
Okay, good man. Well, that's good to hear, and that puts my mind at rest. Amazing. So there we go. So Vegan Multinutrient launching 30th of October. In the show notes, I'm going to put a link to the waiting list. I'm also going to put a link to the ebooks, which we've made in both German and in English, which show all the data, all the research that has gone behind this. From everything I've seen, this is the most evidence-based multinutrient on the planet, and long may it continue. It's also an important point to add to this is that we are going to continuously be developing it and continuously be improving it. So based on the new research that comes out for the second batch, we're already looking to make a couple of minor changes and continuously evolving this product, so it becomes, you know, not only is it the best on the market, but it's also continuously being up to date with the latest research. And that's something that's really important. And eventually, later down the line, we're going to be looking at getting some independent tests on this product. So actually testing it on subjects, so we can see how it's going to affect their micronutrient levels when used therapeutically. So that is another thing that I'm really excited about. So lots of exciting things to come. Until then, hit the link in the show notes and you will be able to join the waiting list and get a discount for when it arrives. Nico, again, like I've said it to you off the podcast, but let's put it on record how grateful we are as a company to have aligned with someone like you, who's so clearly in this for the right reasons, you know, in this to help make an impact on the world, help make a plant-based diet more sustainable and available for all. And when you came to me with this idea, I'm really grateful that you did choose us, and I'm really grateful we've been able to put the work in. It hasn't been easy. There's been a lot of long nights doing it, but I'm so excited for what's to come.
My pleasure. Thanks for your kind words. A pleasure to work with you, and I'm very excited for the product to launch.
Me too. And I hope everyone listening is as well. As always, if you have any questions about the products, feel free to fire us an email. Until then, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. I know it's a world where information and entertainment is everywhere, anywhere and everywhere. So to have your attention for this hour or so is always gratefully received. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful week, wherever you are. And until next time, I will see you soon. Much love.